I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to season 5 of the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries. And as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at eplroundtable@gmail.com.
Hi, my name is Mark. My Twitter handle is at Mr. Mark Simpson. And I'm going to be representing Liverpool.
Hi, I'm Richard. I'm on Twitter at Richard the Burns. And I'm a Manchester City fan.
Hi, I'm Jake. I write for EPL Index and The Boot Room, and you get me on Twitter at Jake Jackman with two N's. I will be representing Newcastle on the podcast.
Hi, I'm Sean Whetstone. I write for Clarence Hugh and West Ham Till I Die. My handle on Twitter is @West Ham Football, so you can already guess I'm a happy hammer.
All right, thanks so much for joining us, guys. For you at home, it's important to know that we are going to try a little bit of a different format today and see if we like it. So if you like it, let us know that you do. If you don't, feel free to also let us know that. But so we will start off, instead of starting with making the rounds, we're going to typically do more of a reaction to news and notes that have been happening throughout the Premier League. Right now, the two main things that are happening, transfers and club friendlies. And with all these friendlies that are happening, I've seen so many large and grandiose reactions to what's been happening on the pitch for people. Like, for example, as a Tottenham supporter, as early as yesterday morning, which would have been Saturday morning, people were all doom and gloom about the fact that we haven't made any big signings, that we sold Kyle Walker to a rival, and everything was going to be awful. Then that night, beat PSG 4-2 in a friendly where they played with 10 men in the second half, and all of a sudden we're legitimate title contenders again. And it's just very hard to keep up with how it looks like a club will perform throughout the season, and we're basing it off of transfers of players that we haven't really seen play for their new clubs yet, or in very small doses, or teams on the whole that we've already seen in the past but maybe are trying out new things on the pitch. Maybe they're trying new personnel, whether it be youth players that are being pulled in. So I'm just curious to quickly get your guys' view on international club friendlies and how much weight should be put into either the performances or the results.
One thing I've noticed this summer is the high-level, high-profile fixtures that are going on. You've had Manchester City playing Manchester United, Arsenal playing Chelsea. You know, there's lots of really big games going on that, especially like English teams versus English teams that I've not noticed normally. As far as friendly goes, in my opinion, it's just glorified training games that are just done to bring the club extra money. They get dragged around the world. Managers hate them, but it's a necessary thing to do to bring in the amount of money that they do to promote their brand. But for me, what I have noticed is the amount of massive fixtures, like with clubs playing each other this year, that I don't know, I personally haven't noticed throughout the last few seasons.
Yeah, I despair of the use of friendlies now. I think I agree that the primary use is to bring players up to fitness, for managers to test out tactics that they've been stewing over the summer, and how to use the new players and to let the players get a feel for that and see what does and doesn't work and which combinations of players can go together, etc. But you're absolutely right that the profile of the friendlies now has been massively ramped up, and we have TV companies that now show friendlies live. And I sort of despair of it, because I just, like, as much as I love watching City and talking about them and all the rest of it through the season, I quite enjoy the summer break, and I don't want to be forced to care about something that still happens in the break that is, to all intents and purposes, a money-making scheme. I get that the clubs have to do that. They have to go and sell the brand, but it doesn't need to be shown on the TV channels, and the highlights shown like they were just a regular Premier League game. It drives me a little bit mad, because it makes people set a bit of stall by the results, and it really doesn't need to happen. I mean, I'll watch the highlights and I'll read about it. And for us against United the other day, and we had a really encouraging performance from a young lad called Phil Foden, stuff like that is great. Pep now sees that he can work with much more established players, but it's no more than that to me. And the fact that we now play these as competitions where there's trophies at the end of them, I think it's all, from a footballing perspective, incredibly unnecessary. But the globalisation of football continues apace, doesn't it? And it's only going to get better or worse, depending on your perspective. But to me, it's only going to get worse.
Yeah, for me, I didn't really put that much importance into pre-season and performances, results. I mean, Arsenal, didn't they beat Bayern Munich yesterday? So that's sort of how irrelevant they are, because that never happens. So, yeah, but there's a couple of things you can take from them. And I think it's certain individuals, they can go out there, and if they're playing for their place, or they come back from loan or something similar, they've got something to prove. And it's always good to watch the players sort of try and fight into the manager's plans. I think you had a Victor Moses last year at Chelsea. That's quite a good example. And at Newcastle this year, we've got Siem Dyong, who's come back, and he's playing quite a prominent role in pre-season. And that's interesting, because he's never really done well for us. So he's sort of got a point to prove. So there's always that edge to it. And I think tactically, managers are never going to give away what they're going to do in the season. Like how you line up on the first day, sort of set pieces, they're going to be completely different to what have been rolled out in pre-season. You'll sort of get an idea of them, but you're never going to get all of it. Because especially with Man United playing Man City, they're not going to, Mourinho and Guardiola are not going to sort of show their hand that early in a pre-season game. So I think it's a fitness thing. It's a global thing now, especially for the top six clubs. So they go off and sort of entertain their fans abroad and sort of bring in commercial ties and sponsorships. I think it's a lot more about that. And I think if managers would be honest, they don't want to go on those far-flung journeys. I know Newcastle are based in England. We've had a game against Hearts and a game against Preston, so it's not like we're going that far, and it's because Benitez wants his players to stay here, and I think all managers would want that, and Newcastle are not at the level yet to need to go to that global level. But yeah, it's not important, is it? I don't think it's all about fitness.
Yeah, well, from my point of view, I remember a time when West Ham used to play pre-season friendlies against people like Billericay or Southend or Dagenham and Redbridge. You know, you'd play all your local sides. But that's long gone. I mean, last year, I think we were in the US, and the year before that, we were in Australia and New Zealand. But this year, Slaven Bilic has actually said he wants very low-key pre-season. So we've just come back from Austria, and we're going on Monday to Germany. So we're keeping it very low-key. Even that said, funny enough, I got approached by a German side, a fifth division German side, who wanted to play West Ham in a friendly. And I was a little go-between. And I had a little insight to this. Do you know a Premier League side wants around £200,000 to play a friendly? And I managed to get it down to 180. It didn't go ahead in the end, but it shows you the money involved. And someone else said televised. So Premier Sports picked up all of West Ham's five pre-season games abroad. And we're going to televise them live. And we're encouraging fans to pay £10 a month subscription. And as someone said earlier, these are glorified training. You know, the first game, people up in arms, it was we played the development team of a third division Austrian team, not the first team, but the development team, and we didn't score. It was 0-0, and West Ham fans were up at arms going, oh my god, what kind of season we're gonna have. Then on the second game, we played Fulham and we won 2-1, but again, the live TV company who promised to do it dropped us and only played it delayed, the match delayed by an hour and a half. And people were going, oh my God, oh my God. Look, it doesn't mean anything. I remember times we've won convincingly every single pre-season and gone on to have a nightmare of a season and get relegated. And equally, I've seen really bad pre-seasons where we've lost everything and we've gone on to do really well. So it means squat. It's glorified training. And as someone else said, there's a little bit of marketing, there's a little bit of brand awareness, and there's a little bit of money. There is one thing you can tell, and I spotted this when I watched a game, is you can look at the body language of some of your players to work out whether they're going to leave or not. Fagouli is linked with Galatasaray. you could see from the two games he's played, he didn't really want to be there, and it, that guy's off. So that was a useful thing for me. Apart from that, it's paid for training sessions, I think.
One thing that I personally use it for, I don't know if anybody else in this group does, I use it for my fantasy football teams. Do you remember last season when Kapui scored like 6 or 7 goals in pre-season, and then he went on and scored loads at the start? I picked up on that. So for a personal point of view,
scored two days ago as well in a friendly.
Really? So so you can like spot the trends there for like your fantasy football picks for the first coming season. But yeah, like everybody else has said, it's just end of the day, it's a bit of money making. You can't take anything from it at all, really.
Yeah, I'm interested in a note that two of you already mentioned. Actually, Sean touched on it as well with playing the local teams. Do you feel like the fact that teams are playing bigger opponents almost over legitimizes it? That because now you're comparing yourself to another European giant while kind of not really addressing the fact that neither of you are putting out your best team or really have a firm grasp on what you're going to be trying to do that season. Like, would it be better if it was either not televised or if you were playing local rivals that Sean mentioned?
Yeah, for me. But that I think that feeds into the profile of the game. And for us as City, playing United or playing Real Madrid or whoever else, I think that's... It's all part of, it does over legitimize it in terms of people analyzing the results, but that feeds into I think what I said earlier as well about making it competitive to the point of adding a trophy to it as well, and calling it like a Champions Cup or, you know, the International Cup or whatever they're calling them. I think that also does something to over legitimize it, because then, I mean, it might only be a small minority, but and it might be specifically the type of fans that these friendlies are aimed at targeting and bringing in. But you do see people talking about it every now and then. It might only be, like, say, a really small minority, but people talk about it as if it's a trophy. And it, I mean, they literally count for nothing. Nobody's bothered about them generally. But every now and then, you will see somebody break through and sort of celebrate it as if it's a real thing with no hint of irony. And I hate that, because I don't think it's too difficult to imagine a few years down the line, whether it be 10 years or whatever, that this becomes a real thing, these sort of end of season tournaments where people do legitimize them, and that there's you know, prize, something that incentivizes the prize winning of it. And I don't know, maybe I might be talking nonsense, but
I think there's a lot of good points in there, because it happened with the Community Shield, where it was basically a glorified friendly, and now you had, not to be speaking with the City fan about the flaws of United, but there were people last year arguing they'd won the treble because they'd won the Community Shield.
Yeah, well, when Mancini was sacked by City, he did it was really cool, actually, because he never got a last game with us that we knew was coming. So he did a thing in the local paper, the Manchester Evening News, where he paid for an advert to say goodbye, and he put on it that he'd, I won't forget our three trophies or something like that, and with the Community Shield taking pride of place there. To me, it's a simple rule. If you win a game or a tournament where you can make more substitutes than you can in a standard competitive game of football, then it doesn't count. It's that simple to me.
You don't forget there's a massive game in Reykjavik in Iceland soon. You know this, don't you? It's a massive game. And
is it
going to
be the European Super Cup thing?
No, West Ham are playing City in Reykjavik in Iceland in August. This is one of the last friendly we're going to play, because we're not allowed to play a friendly at the London Stadium. Some athletics going on. So instead, we've arranged a friendly in Iceland against Man City. I think it's the beginning of August.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, far flung Manchester City, because I'll see them next week in Nashville.
I'll be honest with you, if we win it, I will be celebrating, because it's City. And of course, because it's a friendly, we can play Joe Hart and Zabaleta.
Yeah, well, hopefully if Zabaleta scores the winner and starts kissing the badge, then I'll start to care about that friendly.
Yeah,
until...
Yeah, that's actually a really interesting turn of events there for you, because I'm going to be in Nashville at the end of this week, where Manchester City will play Tottenham, and I'll be seeing Kyle Walker play against us for the first time.
I enjoy.
Or something. but yeah, that is part of an interesting thing about these friendlies. And I think while it is a very shameless marketing ploy, I think the reason this may sound dumb, but the reason why it works is because it works, because fans that are far flung across the world will go see their team at the nearest place to them that isn't England. And so you do get huge turnout locally. I know the Tottenham match yesterday had 33,000. I'm sure the City United match had far more.
Yeah, like 1,000.
Yeah. So it does its job, but I agree. I think if it was a little less high profile, it would take away that legitimacy that some people are giving it, like the Community Shield, like we just spoke about. So now, in a kind of switch of the way we run things, this would be where quote-unquote making the rounds would go. But instead, we're going to ask more specific questions instead of just the vague, what's been happening at your club. We'll start off with you, Mark, talking about Liverpool. There's been so much talk around both Virgil van Dijk and Naby Keita that both of them would be coming. The van Dijk thing was so close that basically every quote-unquote ITK, and even some that weren't, knew that it was about to happen. That one falls through. The Keita deal has been spoken about since June and still hasn't fallen through. What's your take on that as a Liverpool fan? Do you think it's better that you identified your targets early and are now just, you know, trying to get those churned out and get them finished? Or do you think it would be better if you had diversified earlier in the season so you wouldn't be so attached to those two?
This is the first season in a really, really long time that we've gone for a different caliber of player. So what do I mean by that? It means that in the past, we've been in the Europa League or not in Europe. So we've, you know, our targets that we've gone for are a lot easier to get over the line. Now we're going for players that are not only Champions League quality, but like the best players at these teams. And when you start going for these sort of players, you're going to get a lot more objections. So, for example, Van Dijk, captain of Southampton, by far their best player, arguably one of the best defenders in the Premiership. He has been touted by Man City, by Chelsea, Arsenal, by Liverpool, by many other teams. So when you're going for a player like this, Saints obviously don't want to sell, but they know that when these big teams call in, Champions League teams come calling, that they're going to have to listen. And it all kicked off in June because of the way that Liverpool went about it. Now, I don't, you know, this literally just reading between the lines here, I don't know this for a fact, but Liverpool have gone to the players' reps and they've gone to Van Dijk and said, listen, we want you. And Klopp has obviously spoken to him on a lovely little beach in Blackpool, and he's come to his decision that he wants to sign for Liverpool. He could have gone Man City, Chelsea, Arsenal. Anyway, he's decided he want to go to Liverpool. Now, the reason why this whole, I'm trying not to swear, mess up happened was because of the way that Liverpool went about their business afterwards. Because Southampton wanted a bidding war. They wanted to get as much money as possible for this player. But when Liverpool announced through their local media, through like Paul Joyce and The Echo and through the local press, that Van Dijk had agreed personal terms with Liverpool, that stopped the bidding war. And that is why Southampton got really annoyed, and that's why they made notions that they would be reporting Liverpool to the Premier League, and then Liverpool had to apologise, blah, blah, blah. It's come about where now that Van Dijk has come about and said that he doesn't want to play for Southampton, and he's specifically gone to them and said, I want to play for Liverpool. And then that was leaked, kind of interestingly, by Southampton local press. So, you know, if anybody's ever read the Secret Footballer books, for example, some great books, and you'll get quite a decent understanding about how the whole transfer world works. And, you know, as many people said after the whole apology incident with Liverpool, everybody gets tapped up. It's how transfers happen nowadays. It's just how these things happen. You know, like the agents act as an intermediate between clubs, and all these things just sort of happen. And at the moment, it's just all part of the dance. Southampton and Liverpool will probably come to some form of agreement, and Van Dijk will probably be a Liverpool player, bar a major balls up between now and the end of August. But it's just the reason why these things have dragged is because we're going for such a higher caliber of player now. And the same thing with Kaio. He's Leipzig's best player. They don't want to sell. They've got Ralf Rangnick, who is their sporting director, who, if anybody's ever come across him before, they know he's a very stubborn man, and they've got a lot of money, Leipzig, so they don't have to sell. So Liverpool have to persuade the club to sort of part ways. Keita has said that he wants to join Liverpool. It's been reported in the press that he's agreed personal terms, and now it's just a case of trying to do a deal with the club that really don't want to sell one of their best players. You know, they just got into Champions League after a great season in Germany, but again, it's a player who really wants to sign for Liverpool and Jurgen Klopp. This is the first time where Jurgen Klopp has been given a big transfer budget, and he's basically doing a lot of the work. He's going and meeting these players. He's winning these players over before that the clubs have even start to negotiate on a price. And for me, from a personal point of view, it's awesome to see, because if we can get Van Dijk, if we can get Keita over the line, then our squad just improves, dramatically. I think Salah is a great bit of business, but people forget that was such a hard deal to get over the line as well, because of how Roma were negotiating. It worked a little bit more in our favour because they had to sell a player before the 1st of July to fall in line with FFP. So everybody knew a deal was going to be done. It was just what price could they agree on, or if Roma could have sold another one of their players before that date. But that happened. But that was just, when you're going for these different type of players, transfers just become harder. And that's just fact. And that's just where we are at the moment. And also as well, Liverpool never really, speaking from a Liverpool perspective, we never make a transfer seem easy. I think it's been well documented the amount of times that we've tried for players and just failed last minute. But without going on too long and a long way round of asking a short question, it's purely because we're going for a different caliber of player than we're normally to. That's why these deals are dragging on. But I am confident that this week or in the next 10 days, at least one of those deals will get done.
All right, I guess we will see where that lands. Over to you now, Richard. A lot of people are talking right now about how much you've spent on defense in the past, few days, but also if you count Ederson from the start of the window, because you obviously needed to strengthen at goalkeeper as well. The interesting thing that I've seen is that it seems like both groups of fans on either side of the Manchester divide are yelling at the other one that with the amount of money you're throwing down, football is somehow being ruined, which is a debate, that could be had between different fan bases on if they think that this kind of money in football is ruining it. But as a neutral, it seems like both of you are outspending pretty much everyone else. How do you feel about that? And do you think that United are worse in this regard?
I find it really hard to care about transfer fees anymore. I think without diverging too much away from the City point, I think we're at a point now where this summer we're seeing last year's TV money or last year's TV deal kicking in for the first time. And I think it's going to take a good season or two for this to settle and for us to get an understanding of what really constitutes value now. So if in 2 years... £50 million is sort of par for the course for a 26-year-old English right-back. Well, I can well see that being the case because we know that there's a premium for English players anyway. A player who is experienced in the Premier League that fills a gap that we desperately needed filling is not the easiest thing to come by. And we were buying that from a club who are notoriously hard negotiators, and in Kyle Walker's case, obviously, and... who are a direct rival to us. So it was never going to come cheap. As long as the player performs to the standard that we need him to, I suppose this obviously is a qualifier that within reason, I don't really care how much we spend. The thing I would say on it with the fullbacks is, although yes, we are spending a lot of money, that is in a position that has been seriously neglected for years. I think in the season and a bit that I've been doing this show, if not every time I'm on, then it's every other time, I have to make reference to the fact that we've let our fullbacks age to the point that we had four fullbacks, all of whom were early to mid-30s, which is not an ideal position to be in. And whenever we tried to address the fullbacks, when we brought Sanya in, he was over 30 when we brought him in. So we made this problem for ourselves, and now we are having to spend a lot of money to dig ourselves out of it. We've just let Kolarov go for less than 5 million, who is not a great defender. But in this market, it's crazy to me that he's worth less than that. I think
that's an interesting one. Wouldn't you have thought that he was worth more than that to you? Because are you also going to buy two left backs? Because it seems he still could have filled the role as backup left back and backup at center back.
Yeah, what Guardiola is quite publicly said on that, though, is that Kolarov came to him and the club and said that he wanted to make the move, which I guess does reduce the value when you don't have a negotiating position. Mm. Pep's position is that if he doesn't want to be here, and it was said with no malice, he also was at pains to say what a good relationship they had and everything, but he said if he doesn't want to be here, then it's right to let him go. So I think that's fair. And along with Mendy, we've been quite heavily linked with Bertrand at Southampton. The problem is that letting Kolarov go first obviously weakens our negotiating position and will force up the fee. I think more interesting is the amount of money, and obviously the goalkeeper. I mean, the goalkeeper needed buy-in. A lot of people look at Pep as sort of at times a revolutionary manager and who tries to do things a bit different. And this year, he's opted to buy a goalkeeper with hands, which will be a nice change for us from last year. If he can save the ball, that will be a really revolutionary move if we've got a keeper who saves shots on target.
I don't know. Did you see Joe Hart last season?
Yeah, well, in terms of what he's replacing, obviously, I was very surprised that Caballero went to Chelsea as well. I thought that was an odd move. Anyway, the more interesting stuff to me is signing, spending the amount that we spent on Bernardo Silva for a position that wasn't immediately obvious it needed filling. And then the pursuit of Alexis Sanchez, which I don't know how that will end. Money talks, so if we offer the right fee, then Arsenal will accept it regardless of what Wenger says, but I'm not sure that we'll go up to the fee that they want. And the talk now from sources that I know to be very, very good in City transfers is that if we can't get Sanchez, then they're going to make a really concerted effort to sign Mbappe, which I don't think would be successful. But I find that quite interesting because we don't obviously need attacking players, but I guess Pep and the club are looking at this as we want to have a season where we're playing around 60 games and we're challenging every trophy till the end. And if we lose just one striker, if we lose Aguero or Jesus to injury, which is highly possible, then it seriously reduces our options and tactical flexibility. But I think they are more of a statement. The amount that we go and spend on those positions is far more of a statement than the amount that we spend on what was a really significant problem for us in having, before Kolarov went, in having one fullback, and now he's gone, of having none of last season's fullbacks.
Yeah, I will say, I think the reason why it looks so bad right now is because, as you said, you've been on the show for over a year now, and we kept talking about the problem with your aging squad, and it continued to not be addressed. Last year, obviously, a step in the right direction, bringing in Sané and Gabriel Jesus. This just feels like the continuation of that, just in the defense, where, as you mentioned, everybody was over 30. So I do think it's exacerbated a bit, because if that had been spread out over two or three windows, I don't think it would have been as stark as this window where you needed three plus additions at two positions, which obviously makes it look far worse. But as you said, that this is the going rate for those players. And just a note on value, heard it fairly early on in my supporting of Tottenham and have really loved it ever since, which is the value of a player is how much a club is willing to pay. Obviously, there's a difference on the pitch, but if, say, Moussa Sissoko, much to Jake's delight, is offered £30 million to Newcastle to take him, then that's how much he's worth. Is his skill to money ratio very good? No, obviously not. But if somebody's willing to pay that, that is, by definition, his value.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right. Speaking of Newcastle, Jake, you were on our show last week. We start every season off with a special where we have the three promoted clubs on talking about what's been happening there. You mentioned that you hadn't really made a big splash in the transfer market. Now, since then, just 7 days ago, you have now signed two players in Daryl Murphy and Javi Manquillo. Is this the kind of player you expected to be signing when you got promoted again? And is it enough for you to stay in the Premier League this year?
I'll just offer a slight correction. We sold Daryl Murphy. We got Jacob Murphy. I can see the confusion. But
oh, apologies.
That's fine. just clarify that. But yeah, we got Jacob Murphy, winger from Norwich, who was pretty good in the Championship last season. And at the under-21s of England, I think he was just as good as Damari Gray and Nathan Redmond in those matches. So I think he's definitely a talent. And he improves a spot that was quite weak for us last year. We weren't great on the left wing. We were very lopsided and relied on our right wing a lot for attack. So I think that sort of will balance us out, which was needed going into the Premier League. So I think it's a good sign. It's not one that's really going to, you know, shake things up in terms of where we're going to be in the league. He's still a player who hasn't done anything in the Premier League, and it's a bit of a risk. And it sort of shows where we are as a club at the moment. You've all talked about the television money, and the one thing Newcastle don't have this season is we didn't have that television money, and we're really feeling the effects of relegation this season as opposed to last year when we sort of had some money still, parachute payments, and we had the television deal from the previous year, so we could spend a bit. But now this year we're in a completely different league, and we're really seeing how that's affecting us in the transfer window. Benitez really isn't happy at that, but I think he must have had an understanding of where we'd be this season, and we weren't going to ever challenge where he wants to be. We need to stabilise for one or two seasons and get that money in so we can push on and bring in that higher calibre of player. And I think it's going to be a really slow rebuild. And if Benitez sticks around for it, he has to be praised. I think he must have knew it was going to happen, but it's such a big project. And if he does come out successful with a trophy in 3 or 4 years' time, then I think that would be up there with his Liverpool achievement of what he did there. I think it's a huge job, and he's already done so well. And this summer is going to be an interesting one. Jake Murphy's an all right player. Javi Manquillo, he did well at Marseille on loan. He was okay for Liverpool, not great. I think at the time some people thought he should have been given more of a chance, and at Sunderland he was awful, but everyone was awful at Sunderland apart from Pickford and Defoe, so I'm not really going to put too much into that. I think Rafa must see something in him. Apparently the report he's had back from Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid, I think he was at the youth ranks of both, obviously he's come from Atletico, were both good, so Rafa likes to check out on his players, sort of get reports back from coaches who have worked with them, so that's a good sign, especially in terms of a character. I think he's going to be only a backup player, but pretty interesting. I think he's a player that could really come on under Benitez. We saw that with Kieran Clark last season. I think a lot of fans this year coming up against Newcastle, I think Kieran Clark is a bit of a joke defender, but he is certainly not that anymore. He's improved a lot under Benitez, and I think he's going to be in for a great season. So hopefully Benitez can do that. It's all going to be about improving the players we have, bringing in players with potential and really bringing them on quickly. And I think the one thing we have as an advantage for that is Benitez. I think he's easily the seventh best coach in this league, if not higher. I think he's really our our joker in terms of what we can achieve. I think he's really going to push us up, and he's going to, you know, tactically, there's not many better than him. So I think that's going to be a huge plus. You know, I'm just looking at our record transfer fees just to sort of bring home the point of where we are. Our record transfer fee is still Michael Owen, paid in 2005. So, yeah, I think we've probably got the longest standing transfer record that hasn't been broken. After that is Alan Shearer. After that is Albert Luque. So, yeah, none of them are recent, and it's kind of worrying. But the five of the next six came in that season we were relegated. So I think we were slowly starting to push on and to spend a little bit. But we're spending with the wrong coaches, spending on the wrong players.
Mitrovic and that year?
Yeah, Wijnaldum, Talvin, Shelby, Townsend, those sort of players. Yeah, it was all of them. So we're slowly getting there. We've totally rehauled our scouting system, and Benitez is the pivotal figure in that. I don't think there are many managers in the Premier League anymore. It's a lot of sort of committees that do transfers, but Benitez is definitely the guy who does transfers at Newcastle. So I think that can be only be a positive thing. From what I've read and from what I've heard from people, I think we're going to, the biggest deals are still to come for Newcastle, and I think we need to bring in 3 to 4 maybe not quality players, but players that are better than what we have, so we can continue pushing the players we have to improve. Because if you train with better players, you're going to become a better player. So, you know, we have to sort of look for slow improvement, as opposed to just bringing in, like if you look at West Ham, like, we can bring in an Arnautovic at the moment. We don't have the funds to do that. We can't just go out and spend big on one player or two players and just hope that pushes us on. We need to just really work on the team, improve the weakest link. I think we're slowly doing that this summer. I think we've improved a weak link on the left wing. I think Florian Lejeune, the centre-back, comes in. He's a ball-playing centre-back, and he'd really match up well with Kieran Clark as a pairing. So I think that improves the weak spot as well. I think we need a striker. One of the things we didn't have last year was, or two seasons ago, was goals, and we haven't really addressed that. We don't have any more goals in the team than we really had then. If any, we got less without Wijnaldum. So we need to bring in a striker, probably a goalkeeper as well. Yeah, I think we're going to bring in a few players. And I think, even without any more signings, I think we'd probably be all right to stay up purely because of Benitez, but it's all about keeping him.
Mm. Is this one of those years where you just are going to assume that there's probably going to be 3+ worse teams?
Yeah. I think there will be 3 worse teams. I think to start with, I think Huddersfield and Brighton start beneath us. We've got a lot more Premier League experience than them, and we've got a better manager. And I think there's going to be a few teams that don't do too well. Like Stoke haven't really pushed on that much. Burnley, there's enough teams down there. The Premier League wasn't great quality last season under the top 6. Sure. And with Benitez, I think he's worth the 10 points on his own at least. I think he's really going to just... I can't see him getting relegated in a full season. So I'm not too worried about that, but I don't think it's going to be a great season either. It's going to be very much one of consolidation.
Well, you're going to start the season well when you manage to beat us away again. So that'll set a nice tone for you to start 2017-18. Coming to you now, Sean, with West Ham. Jake alluded to it. You bring in Arnautovic. Chicharito says he's on the way, so we assume that's going to be confirmed here soon. You already mentioned the City Boys, Zabaleta and Joe Hart joining as well. This is a lot of player movement. I'm just curious as to what you think the goal is this season by bringing in this many players. Is it just top half? Last year, obviously finishing 11th. Is it trying to challenge that top 6, the top 8? Where do you think you'll end up with all these players, and do you think that makes it worth it?
Well, I think there's 4 and we haven't finished yet. But we had a mayor last summer. We're bringing in people like Gökhan and Simone Zaza. And these foreign imports just didn't work for us. And in January earlier this year, our chairman, David Sullivan and David Gold, said, look, we need Premier League experience. We want proven Premier League experience. We're not going to gamble with foreign imports anymore. We want leaders. We want personalities. We want characters. And this is what our strategy is. You know, starting with Zabaleta, all right, he's not the quickest. But you know what? You ask any City fan, he's loved by them. He's got a lot of experience to hand down. He's got a lot of leadership. Joe Hart, yes, he didn't have a good season on loan. He's lacking a bit of confidence, but he's still a world-class goalkeeper. And again, I think that will really help West Ham push on. For whatever reason, Adrian and Randolph were not rated by Slav. He's let Randolph go already. If someone comes in for Adrian, he will go as well, and I'm sure we're bringing a backup. And Arnautovic, you know, it's our record. I mean, I've just been doing a blog on all the record signings, and it's amazing. You know, with AU last year at 20.7 million and now 25 million. He's on $100,000 a week as well. So, and a 5-year contract. So there's another 25 million. So it's 25 million transfer fee, 25 million on wages for Arnautovic. Here's a guy who's got a lot of character. I mean, if you look at all his previous misdemeanors, I know he's knuckled down since he's been on Stoke. But, you know, he drove into a bike on into a golf buddy and tore his ligaments. He told a Austrian policeman that he earned more in a week than he could in a lifetime. This guy's got a character. Even last week on his own Instagram, he's sticking two fingers up. He's left Stoke. He's on his way for a medical. He's sticking two fingers up and go, London, here I come. He's definitely going to be a nightclub buddy for Andy Carroll. But the real jewel in the crown and proof we are moving on is that we can get someone like Hernandez, you know, old little P. And even Jose Mourinho said, here is a guy, he said this in April before we signed him, here's a guy who's almost guaranteed to get you 20 goals. He's a poacher. He's a fox in the box. And that's what we wanted. Our strategy is get more goals. That's what was missing. We want to push on to a top eight, you know, a top six. But if Jose Mourinho's to be believed, and he only said this last week, he said he was talking about his own team and his lack of transfer, but he said, look at West Ham. He named the four players we just named. And he said, it looks like West Ham are playing to win the Premier League. I will leave it there.
So, everybody, talk to your bookies now. West Ham to win the title. I have a second thing that I wanted to ask you about that is pertinent to the team I love and you do not. In Tottenham, we are going to have to deal with moving to a new stadium the next two seasons, this year moving into Wembley, the following year into yet unknown named stadium. White Hart Lane 2.0 is the best we can think of at the moment.
Uber. Well, it's going to be called Uber Stadium.
That was a negotiation at one point. It was never finalized. But I'm curious to get from you, as a fan of a club that had to relocate last year, what could Tottenham avoid so that it would be less impactful than it was for you last year? As you said, it was not a great season for you.
Well, it's tricky because you've got to bring the hearts and minds. You know, it's always emotional. I know you're not really moving very far, but it's difficult to get the fan. It's about the match day experience for me. And you have certain rituals and everything. And even knocking down your stadium, it's going to completely transform the area. And people sometimes, marketing departments of Premier League get carried away in the marketing and they think that's everything. But actually, you've got to really think about the match day experience, where people are going to drink, where people are going to eat, where they're going to celebrate afterwards, how they get in, how they get out of the stadium. That's where you've really got to concentrate on the fan experience. And oh, too many clubs, and this includes Arsenal with the Emirates, don't think about that. They think about the aesthetics and the branding and everything else. And there's one thing I think Spurs have got to learn from the West Ham experience is all of that, you know, because straight away, we were fighting with Bournemouth on the first day of the season, you know, because they didn't get the fan segregation right. And then, you know, this modern day thing with they were selling popcorn, right? And Haagen-Dazs ice cream, Ben and Jerry's ice cream stalls. And I just think it devalues football a little bit. Each time we go a bit more mainstream and there's popcorn sellers and ice cream sellers and candy floss at football games. I think it just devalues the traditional working man's game a little bit more.
Because it becomes more of an event rather than just about the sport.
It is, and it becomes more of a tourist attraction than it is people who go real football fans who go for the love of the game, you know? They sometimes don't care whether they're going to, you know, a concert or which day have we turned up? What's on today? Is it a football game or is it concert, athletic? Doesn't matter, as long as there's something good to watch. And you know, don't get me wrong, that's what the Spurs model, you know, they're going to go after a franchise for NFL and, you know, they want concerts and everything else. So it becomes a destination in sales. So don't lose your soul. Don't lose your identity as fans. It's got to be, it can't be soulless. You know, if you've been to the Emirates, you'll find there is a bit of soulless there. It could be said about the London Stadium, about West Ham as well. But, you know, I'm hoping we're trying to build it. We're trying to have, we've got our first year in now. It's going to be strange for you. The first thing last season was, for the first five or six matches, it was like going to Wembley every day, walking along Wembley Way and going to Wembley. Well, for Spurs fans, every day is going to be like going to Wembley. And I am looking forward, Kev, to Spurs away. I'm hoping you're going to come over for that. And
for West Ham? I don't know. Yeah. I'll be coming over at some point for sure.
Yeah, but go West Ham Spurs at Wembley. That's got to be a special day out.
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting. And as you say, a lot of clubs will be looking forward to singing the Wembley chant, as, of course, everybody will be making it at least once. All right, now we're going to head into Player Watch, which is not just going to be which players have impressed and disappointed this week. I think that was a segment that I particularly loved, perhaps more than some guests and definitely some listeners, based on some feedback we got back. So this will be changing each week. It won't always be the same segment. This week, since it's still preseason, I'm interested to get your guys' prediction on who will be your leading goal scorer and who will be your leading assister in the 2017-2018 Premier League season. We'll lead off with you, Mark.
Okay, I'm going to go top goal scorer, Sadio Mane. And top assister, if he's still at the club, come September the 1st, Phil Coutinho.
Yeah, despite all that Barcelona reported interest tied to the whole Neymar thing, but we are not a La Liga / Ligue 1 podcast, so you can get all your takes on that elsewhere. All right, on to you now, Richard, for Manchester City. You have this whole debate here between Aguero and Jesus, and obviously you still have De Bruyne who can whip in free kicks and everything like that. Where do you think this one will fall?
I'm going to go for top scorer as Jesus. His record in the games that he did play last season was absolutely ridiculous. There'll be a bit of rotation between him and Aguero, but I think they'll probably play together more than they did last year when they were both available, because they played together the last two games of the season and they were sensational together. But it is going to require Aguero to drop a lot deeper than he's been used to before. I still think he will score a lot of goals, but I am going to tip Jesus to be our top scorer. Top assists, I'll go De Bruyne, because that's what he does. The guy gets a ridiculous amount of assists, even when he's not on form. So I think that one will be pretty cut and dry.
Yeah, the only mild concern I have about De Bruyne, which is based in just silly facts and stats, is that the last 3 years, the player that had the most assists had a huge drop-off the following. I assume that won't happen to De Bruyne, but like it happened to Fabregas, it happened to Ozil, and so hopefully you can stay clear of that drop-off this year. Jake, Dwight Gale last season scores, what, 23 goals?
Yeah, 23.
Yeah, for Newcastle, which is a lot. But the last time we saw him in the Premier League, he was a on and off again left winger for Crystal Palace. Do you think he'll be able to repeat any reasonable return like he did last year in the Championship?
Yeah, I think Dwight Gale is a very good player. I don't think I've seen many more technically gifted with his feet play for Newcastle, especially when I went to saw him six or seven times live last year, and his touch and his just the way he can beat players, and it's quite impressive. I think he was very misused at Crystal Palace, which isn't a surprise considering he played under Alan Pardew. I think Benitez is geared a system to Dwight Gale's strengths, and he really comes out looking at he looks Premier League class. He looked a cut above in the Championship, and I can't believe he's not going to do well this season. I don't think he's going to get 15 plus, but definitely somewhere around 13-14 is a very reasonable target. Is like he scored a goal every 93 minutes in the Championship, which 23 goals doesn't give him justice because he was out quite a long time with injury. Like he would have broken records in that league. I don't think there's been a striker that's come up with the record he has. Like a goal every 93 minutes is ridiculous. Even if you're playing for Newcastle in the Championship, that is a ridiculous record. I think he's definitely gonna get a lot of goals. He would definitely be our top scorer unless we bring in a better striker, which isn't out of the question. Rafa will want to improve, and we'll definitely bring in a striker of some sort, whether they'll be better than Dwight Gale. I've heard Andre Gray mentioned, who's a very similar mould, so it sort of shows that he wants to stick to that system. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens there. But at the moment, yeah, Dwight Gayle will be our top scorer. Definitely, he's probably our best player. So yeah, that's he's going to score a lot of goals. Assists, I'm not too sure. Probably.
Richie?
Yeah, either Richie or Shelvey, I think. Shelvey's, I think, the only player we've got that could turn a game in the Premier League. He's got that quality on his day. I've never seen him look so fit. He looks really fit in pre-season. He apparently did a lot of training over the summer. He's slimmed down. He looks very up for it. He's been talking about England again. Whether he's going to get to those heights, I said a lot last season that I thought he was going to get to those heights this season. He's definitely somebody who could get into the World Cup squad if he has a good year. I think he's at the right place for it under Benitez. So yeah, I'm going to tip Shelvey. I think set pieces and the way he can just lift a ball a long ball over to Dwight Gayle, he can just put it on a six-man. See, there's going to be a lot of goals like that. So yeah, I'll go Shelvey for that.
All right, and wrapping up with you, Sean, it's actually really interesting to see how you will roll out next year with all these new signings. You still have Andre Ayew there, who played up front and on the wing last year. You bring on Arnautović, who can also play up front or on the wing. We assume Chicharito, though, as you say, will be the man up front and, as you said, could be a 20-plus goal season striker if we can believe Jose Mourinho.
The special one says 20. You're guaranteed 20 goals, so I'm going to go with that. Andy Carroll will probably be on the bench. Diafra Sacco, another striker, probably be on the bench.
Will be in the physio room.
I think
right?
AU will spend a lot of time on the bench.
Do you not think he might be on the way out?
Well, I think if a bid came in and we could get a 20 million back, it would be gone straight away, yeah. Hernandez Little P will be our top goal scorer, and I will be delighted if we can hit 20 goals for our top goal scorer. They usually come from a variety of people. You know, we need a hero. We haven't had one since sort of, you know, Dean Ashton and John Hartson, really, and Paolo Di Canio. It's you know, a goal scorer who really scores. I think John Hartson was our last goal scorer that scored over 20 goals, so it's well overdue. As for assists, I think it could be a three-way tie between Antonio Lanzini and Arnautović. You know, all three have got really good records for giving assists. I think Arnautović got five. I think it was five or six from Lanzini last year and six or seven from Antonio. So, you know, if we feed Little P, he will score, I believe. And they'll be coming, whipping him from the left, whipping him from the right. And he just sit there in the six or the 12-yard box and be knocking them in all day long. So that's my dream anyway.
All right. Well, this has been fun trying out this new format with you guys, but this part will always stay the same. We're out of time. So if you'd like to tell the people where they could reach you, now would be a good time.
So I'm on Twitter. My name is Mark. It's Mr. Mark Simpson. And yeah, if you want to find out about anything Liverpool related, it's all there.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at Richard the Burns. I'm also on the Blue Moon podcast, which is released every Friday, a dedicated Manchester City podcast. And throughout the next season, I will be writing two articles a week specifically about City for Yahoo Sport UK.
Yeah, you can get my Twitter at Jake Chapman with two N's. I write for EPL Index and the Boot Room quite regularly, so check both of those sites out.
Hi, yeah, you can find me at clarenthugh.info, where I'm assistant editor there. We run about 20 stories a day on West Ham. Got very good sources. I also do blogging on westhamtillidie.com. And when the season starts, we'll be podcasting again on a West Ham podcast called More Than Just a Podcast.co.uk, and that's Moore as in Bobby Moore. And you can find me on Twitter at West Ham Football. Cheers, guys.
Yeah, and if you'd ever like to reach us at the show, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at EPLRoundtable@gmail.com. All right, thanks so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure as always, and we hope you keep listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.